Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk.
Hey, Fred.
Welcome back from your vacation. Hopefully everything was reliably performing and the ice maker continued to generate margaritas for you.
That's funny you bring that up. He got rid of his ice maker in his boat.
Because it didn't work.
It was a pain. It's a pain. He didn't want it. And then he also had a failure of his generator, which is an odd... I don't know if it's
auxiliary marine electrical system.
Yeah, it was a terminal block. You showed me pictures of it. It was melted.
Oh,
the,
wow.
The connections on the ends of the, the high power cables.
The lugs to feed the rest of the boat.
Yeah. It was a little terminal, one of the standard black terminal blocks that would connect up to a bus. And it was obviously melted.
A little bit of salt corrosion going on there.
There you go. That's what I told him. I said, that would be something that they hopefully would, do some conformal coating on or something, or somehow seal it really well
with a dielectric. Seal it with something conductive. That would be bad.
In a marine environment, that's going to be a critical thing, especially in a high current. Conduction terminal. That's pretty much what happened. But he's got solar panels now, and he's going to get more solar panels. And you really will only need the generator as an extreme backup.
Yeah.
So that's it anyway.
But it's good if you need it, that it actually works and it's not all corroded out.
Right. And
start a fire below deck. That would be
bad. That's pretty bad on a boat. So anyway, but we had a great time and glad to be back and ready to talk to you about reliability.
All right, cool. I'm glad. Welcome back. We did get a question, and I know I talked to, I think it was with Mujan on one part of the question, but there's another aspect of it we didn't get to. And I thought, we should talk about this. And Stefan's message made me think of you because he said, I could go on a rant. Exclamation point. And
it's the rant part.
That's what reminded me of you. But he's saying that the part of the discussion I was having was setting goals and objectives and stuff like that for the performance of a system. And I never really got into what kind of system they were making. But it was, we got to consider tolerances and capabilities and how much it costs to manufacture and how much time it takes to engineer it and all this stuff. And then what are we going to sell it for and all that kind of stuff. It all matters. And he says, and then Europe is going out with this right to repair stuff. And he says, now we've got another consideration to it. So how do you balance making a product that is both reliable and repairable and meet your customers' expectations and stuff like that? And cheap, of course, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is one for Kirk, because I know that you've taken apart, and we were talking about ice makers there, and is how many different blenders you've used and gone through to
tested
them to failure.
Right. And trying to take them apart. Sometimes I can, see if there's a possibility of repairing it. But, they're a big trade-off for a manufacturer to making something repairable and at the same time making sure it's like water resistant or proof, like a phone. Mm-hmm. The classic example is, of course, the broken glass of screens, and eventually, a lot of times, especially my daughter, would break the screen. I've done that too back in the past. Fortunately, they've gotten a lot stronger, but taking that apart in disassembling a smartphone, you're really risking, of course, introducing, especially you know, unsealing it and then putting in the glass and trying to seal it back, make sure it all works, is it just that's yeah, it's repairable, but it's not easily repairable. It's just like saying, you know, you got to have the right to repair a digital watch. I'm sorry, folks. It's just not a lot you can repair in that thing.
There's not a whole lot of thing. There's a chip. That's about it.
Right.
And a driver for the screen. And yeah. A battery. Okay.
Right. And the battery will wear out. And that's something that, you know, that needs to, it would be, I know you may be familiar how the battery packs in an iPhone or a smartphone are just a very, very flat, very, very thin, fixed to the back of the, maybe the back of the case or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's possible that they could make that easier, but every, you know, taking it and opening it up, risk now making it less water resistant and, you know, well, a rainstorm.
This has been solved before. People have been making wristwatches with the little disc batteries on the back of it. And there's a little port, basically. You get a nickel or a quarter. Remember those nickels?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and you twist it open and you pull the battery, right. Put a new battery and twist it closed. And you go swimming with it. It was fine.
If you didn't damage that little O-ring that was around it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But it worked.
It would,
but Apple's not going to put a port on the back of it that you can snap open or slide open or unscrew or whatever. Because one, it takes real estate to add grooves and seals and threads you know, all that stuff. And according to Apple, it doesn't look right. We don't need that.
Well, you probably remember the days that you did have you were able to swap batteries in an
iPhone. Oh, yeah, you
had
to, because if you're on the phone more than 4 hours, you had to change the battery.
Yeah. So they did make it easy to plug in and unplug it without opening a case and, you know, ungluing the whole thing and trying to glue it back together. So, but you're right. It's not aesthetically pleasing to have a little door, and it's also the reason they got rid of that 3.5 millimeter audio
plug. Port is they couldn't seal it.
Right,
it took too much real estate to seal it.
It took too. It's right, another potential leak through a path. Mm-hmm. So and now they're, you know, able to withstand several feet of water for some period of time. Yeah. But so, you know, the whole right to repair came about from, I think, the John Deere or farm equipment here in Colorado.
Didn't they put in some like proprietary software stuff that you had to be at a dealership to do it?
Exactly. You were locked in.
Oh, hell, my combine just stopped and they call a dealer and they say, well, bring it on in. And they're 400 miles away, you know?
Right, exactly. And so, you know, they forced the manufacturer now to be able to let the end user or the owner to be able to access the necessary software or I think parts or whatever and repair it themselves. And I'm sure most farmers are pretty handy with that. They probably have to work on their own equipment all the time.
Yeah. No, it's kind of the old standard. It's, you know, if you got a tractor, you got to be part metalsmith, part, you know, engine mechanic to keep it running. You just have to.
Kind of like my brother on his boat. He's got, you know, he's got to work on everything. Because when you're, you know,
200 miles from the shore,
you better be self-sufficient. So
that's right.
But you got radios and he has people all over helping him and he can call out now, fortunately. Yeah. But
it's one of those things, though, in the design, the reliability part of it is, I mean, there is an adage for industrial equipment, right? Where uptime is critical, right?
Right.
And I ran into this even with a server. It was a workstation at the time. And they had problems with the motherboard. And they were pushing the edge of technology a bit with that. Not too terribly hard, but people counted on it. They would get it, and it was for CAD work and simulation work and stuff like that. And if that engineer's computer was down, they were down. Right. It's not like you pick up a slide rule and do the same kind of work. And HP at the time, that division said, oh, well, if you have that problem, box it up, ship it to us. We'll fix it and send it back to you. Take about a week, maybe 2 weeks. And they're like, no, I'm going to buy a Dell. by somebody else. You know, I can't afford to be down. And and so what HP did with their new version of it that I heard about, it wasn't my idea, but it was why they had such a success, is that they made the side of the box a port, or just a door. And the entire motherboard assembly slid in and had all end connections on the end, sockets that it would just slide in and snap into place, and it was good to go. And the power supply was separate, you know, the display and all other stuff was separate. But the main thing that they were having trouble with was this motherboard. And so they knew they had trouble getting the design right. And they did a bunch of work there to actually make it work better. But their customers loved it. They call, they say, hey, I'm getting this error. And they know it's a motherboard. And HP would FedEx out the new motherboard. They'd open up their side door, pull the old board out, stuff the new one back in, and they're up and running. And they take the other one, put it in that packaging from FedEx, and ship it back. And HP then got motherboards that they could do true root cause analysis on, because if it just goes to a repair shop, it just gets fixed and then sent out. And as you know, the data coming out of it is pretty bullshit. It's pretty bad. And so they solved the problem, and what the customers loved the most was they could fix it themselves. And it wasn't the right to repair. It was, we got to speed up the, get them back up to speed. But it was one of the things that the design for that circumstance was two hinges on the side of the box. And that was it, you know, and redesign the board so all the connectors are on one end. And it wasn't a horrible redesign for them to do it.
Yeah.
But you get into more modern products, like a toaster. If I had, you know, if they had to make the toaster so that it was repairable, it has to have access, and it has to have the connectors or sockets or ways to isolate, say, the power supply or this part or that part, so that you could replace it without having advanced skills in laser technology and you know, and all other stuff in your house.
Yeah, but, you know, you have a $10, you know, $20 toaster, and you're going to, you know, how much is your own time worth?
All right. We're not going to get into this. You've talked about how many things you've taken apart.
But it's mostly because I'm a reliability engineer. I want to know why it failed. See something obvious. But for many products, it's just, products have advanced, and it has new features or benefits or lower power or whatever. Anyway, the technological advancement of that product class or whatever motivates you sometimes to, you know, to go ahead and get the next, you know, better model.
Well, there's that. There's the obsolescence thing you're saying is, you know, just generational. But I'm thinking of like the laptop I'm looking at. I know it's crammed with stuff. It's, you know, and it's got all these, and seeing how some of these devices are made is, we don't have that capability in a house.
No.
You know, if I go to a repair shop, they're just going to replace everything. Just take the guts out, put new guts in it.
Exactly. It's just like trying to, you know, saying, going to a watchmaker and asking them to repair your, you know, your smartwatch, your Apple iWatch. I'm sorry, it's not really something you can do other than pull out that module and put in another module,
if it's capable of doing that, if it's not hardwired in, you know.
Right.
If you're in there doing microscopic soldering and have to get it right, and you don't have a robot doing it, that's not repairable in my mind.
You know, so don't make it so that the customer has to repair it. There are things like the battery that, yes, it is going to wear out probably maybe before technological obsolescence, and you may want to replace that. And, you know, so it would be something that I don't think Apple's going to change their design because of the right to repair laws.
No, but they're going to provide you go to the store or go to the repair shops, and they have the specialized tools they can rent to you and stuff like that. So they meet the letter of the law, but I think just because they're a $4 trillion company means that they're going to do what they want to do anyway. But
right.
vast majority right. of things like the tractor system or there's one other story about a repair I did a couple of years ago that is interesting. But the idea is that it's, and you commented on it, why not just make it so it's reliable so you don't have to repair it?
Right. Like that, you talked about that just previously. Was it HP made it a board that you could snap in and snap out? Mm-hmm. And you may remember, I'm old enough to remember, I think Motorola TVs with works in a drawer, you know, mm-hmm. you could pull out the card
the main guts of it. And it
yeah,
was
the
done.
Guts of it. There was, I'm thinking, well, maybe in TVs.
Yeah, yeah, that was designed on the principle like the old vacuum tubes, right?
Right.
The vacuum tubes were well labeled, and they say, all right, that one looks burned out. It right. might be this one or this one. Go down right. to the store, and there was a tester in the store.
That's right.
And you
That's
could right. buy the one that was broken, and mm-hmm. and you're up and running again.
Right.
But then they replaced it with circuit boards, and people weren't like, what do I do with this thing? And so they made it so that it was easy for you to say, oh, this board is bad. Replace it, snap it back in. You don't have to lug the TV. And the big CRT TVs were pretty heavy and cumbersome
oh,
to
yeah.
move around.
I had a Sony Trinitron that was, you know.
Do you realize the first laptop had a CRT screen on it?
It was, yes, I remember the compact. I think it was a compact.
Compact, yeah, the luggable. Is what
yeah,
I
yeah, it was like
called it.
30 pounds and a you know big case and
yep.
tiny little 4-inch screen.
Yeah, that's all he could fit in it.
Yeah, hey, it was portable, you know.
Yeah, with
you
a fork.
Strong arms. Yeah.
So but, this other repair story here. This one is yeah. the other end of smartwatches and everything else. This was a. We bought a, I don't know, chandelier is the right word for it, a light fixture mm-hmm. for our deck. We had improved the deck. We ran some electricity out there, some speaker wire out there, and we had this kind of chandelier thing sent over our table on the deck. And it was uh-huh. under a pergola, so it was all, you know, pretty cool looking.
Uh-huh.
And so my wife picked out this light fixture thing, and it worked for a season. And the next year, we get ready to, we're cleaning the cobwebs off and fixing it up and stuff. And it just, a couple of the lights just wouldn't, it wasn't the light bulb itself, because you could take a good working one and swap it over, and it's that socket wasn't working.
Uh-huh.
So I said, I think I can get to those. Let me check it out. It was the cheapest way to set up power to a light bulb I have ever seen. It was, you know, they had a wire coming in, and they put it on a piece of plastic that was yeah. at the bottom of the socket. And yeah. then they had a copper plate that was bent that went up into the socket. And yeah. there was no solder, no screw, no nothing. It was just friction fit. And not even much friction on it at all. And I like, okay, that's not going to work. So I got my soldering iron out and just put a little dab of solder on it, because it wasn't a whole lot of clearance, but I put a little bit on mm-hmm. it. It worked, assembled it. It worked for another four seasons. But I knew enough about electrical engineering and electronics just to say, oh, well, those two things need to fit better together, because there's a little bit of corrosion, but right. if I made more intimate contact, they would conduct electricity.
Right, right.
But it was, and so I called the company and they said, oh, sorry to hear that. We'll send you another one. So we plugged the new one in after another couple sockets failed after a couple of years. Yeah. And I was like, all right, let's try the new one. Four of the six sockets didn't work right out of the box. So I got my trusty soldering iron out again. And just soldered them all.
Yeah. And it worked.
And it worked. But it was not designed to be repaired.
I hope you never buy another thing from them again.
Oh, no. But I was like, how the hell are you making any money?
You're right. Exactly. You know, if you're having to send out a new one, like,
you're having trouble. Let me send you a new one.
Yeah. And so, you know, I had a printer recently, not an HP, mm-hmm. another brand, and was recommended by Consumer Reports. And I had a paper jam and it failed. And it would, after I tried to unjam the paper, even though it had a nice clips in the back to take off the paper mm-hmm. tray thing and get in the back of it and things like that.
Yeah.
Somehow pulling out the paper misaligned the head or something. And so they sent me another one, you know, said, would you, you know, you'll have to send back the one you have as soon as you get it. Cause you know, a lot of places you can't be without a printer or you mm-hmm. need it. So they, at least then they sent one and then credited me when I sent back the one yeah. that failed. So yeah, that's a way to do it. You know, that I can't be without a phone or can't be without certain things. So I would have that. But again, you know, the question is why not fix whatever's failing unless it's a known, you know, wear out like a battery, what you're going to expect.
Or like bearings or stuff like that. They're just, they're quasi consumables, right? They are going to last whatever they're going to last and they get consumed in their use. Brake pads are like that. Right.
Right. But you know, for the manufacturer, of course, he's hoping that he'll have a newer, more, featured, you know, rich, a piece of equipment, new functions or new something like that. And you're questioning whether you want to put another $100 in an older phone, by putting in the battery or repairing it or doing the effort of doing a self-repair as opposed to going and just purchasing the newer model phone mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. a new battery in it.
You know, part of it is the technology and how fast it's advancing. It's right. also what's mm-hmm. How important is it to you? You know, so in part of Stefan's question is, you know, did he cut back on tolerancing and precision and stuff like that? Makes it a little bit less reliable. You reduce the amount of repairs or reworking you do in the factory mm-hmm. to get it right. Mm-hmm. Stuff mm-hmm. like that. It all saves money in the short term. Mm-hmm. And that what I find is the real challenge, and I use this all the time, and I think it was about the time you were at Dell, is that their customer service and their repair system was so good that people that had their laptop fixed mm-hmm. by Dell or their computer fixed by Dell mm-hmm. were better customers. They stayed with the company because they right. experienced how good it was. And then they right. switched off to some fly-by-night customer service system and lost all of that credibility mm-hmm. pretty much overnight. It was amazing how fast that deteriorated. But mm-hmm. it was able to be repaired, these older laptops and stuff like that. But it was also, it's not just that it's designed to be repairable, that there's a hatch there or a clip you can get into the back of the printer or whatever, but
right.
it has to actually be easy to do and convenient and be successful at it. So if you would have removed the paper, put it back together and still printing with that same printer, you would probably be more loyal to that brand.
Right.
But your experience was, oh, good grief, they can't even make this right.
Right, right. So, and you know, I wonder if they figured out, you know, why pulling the paper out of a jammed printer would misaligned the head or somehow do that. And mm-hmm. they couldn't, you know, the customer couldn't reset the head alignment, which I tried several times.
Can you imagine the tolerance stack inside a printer to get the paper and the print head
yeah.
to be where they think they are?
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. I think, you know, that they do what they do mm-hmm. and can flip, you know, do both sides of printing and, it's got, you know, fax scanning or no, fax. It's funny. They still have that function.
You know, but, yeah. It's kind of built into
some
other chip.
When's the last time you said it? Yeah. But, you know, making it repairable has trade-offs to make it possibly less reliable. That's the problem. And maybe even less easily manufactured because you've got to make sure that, you know, somebody can get into it, I guess.
Yeah, there's more fasteners, I don't know what more connectors.
It would be interesting to see the fine print and the laws that they're trying to say, you know, how it's got to be repairable.
Yeah. You know?
But we remember the old PCs where you could open up the back and there's a graphics board and dim, you know, the dim memory chips that you could put
snap
in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was... I don't know right now. I haven't looked at mine. So
the good old days.
Yeah. whether I'd be able to repair the one I have. And in general, I don't expect need to. And, you know, it's been pretty reliable. So
yeah. And all of the, and all of the systems we're using to record this actually stayed in service for the last 20 minutes or so. Yeah. It's all good. I'm glad that your trip that went well, although you didn't have ice. So, you know, I had to suffer through in this vacation.
Yeah, we made it though. And so, yeah, we're looking forward to maybe going back next year.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so, and but, I met, go ahead.
Well, the idea is that Stefan sent us a question. It had a couple of parts, so we got a couple episodes out of it. But at this point, I usually say, you know, if you've got a question, that kind of stuff. I think we kind of covered this one pretty well. A couple different angles to it, a couple different things to consider, but it's just because it is repairable doesn't mean it's good for your brand. It's got to be pleasant to repair it. Yeah. It's kind of the bottom line of this one.
And every repair job takes there is a risk of introducing a new flaw or a new issue if it's not done, you know, correctly. So
that's right. Oh, you and I both know this firsthand, don't we?
Yeah.
So if you've broken something recently, you know, let us know. How did you repair it, or did you repair it, or all that good stuff? Or if you've got a question or a comment or a thought on some of the topics we cover here, or have another idea for a topic, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and there's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Kirk and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our About pages on ascendoreliability.com. Basically, lots of ways for you to get in touch with us. Very low barrier to entry. And so come on over and join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you.
Yep. Send those questions. We love them.
We love them. All right. Thanks so much, Kirk. We'll talk margaritas, Fred. Later.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.